Hey everyone, it's Rick Fox here to remind you that the Spring's Premier InsurTech Conference Accelerate, powered by NetView, is just around the corner. One of the highlights of the event each year is the NetView Day of Caring, and this year it's benefiting a Minneapolis-based charity who helps people struggling with poverty, homelessness, unemployment, addiction, and so many other life issues. We need your help, and you don't even have to be a NetView member or attending the conference to pitch in. Go to www.netviewaccelerate.com and click on the Day of Caring page to donate money for supplies or sign up to volunteer. Thank you.
Welcome to the Vertifor Insurance Podcast with Rick Fox. We're here to talk about the industry with some of its biggest influencers. From technology, trends, and current events, if it's happening in insurance, you'll hear about it here. Make sure to tune in every week and join in on the conversation with us on social media at Vertifor. And now, here's Rick Fox.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Vertifor Insurance Podcast, the VIP. I am so excited to have a rock star in the insurtech industry here today, Caribou Honig. But before I even get started with all of that, I do need to give a shout out to my man Caribou, who was nice enough to come back and record again with me because we had some, as we like to call them, technical difficulties in the first round. So Caribou, welcome and thank you for being a good sport and coming back on. We appreciate it.
Rick, it's my pleasure. And look, insurance is a risk business. We took a risk, you know, and this time around,
and
we
sort of self-insured. Deductible.
That's right. Yeah. We self-insured that it would record. Let's hope this time it'll work out.
Yes. I'm feeling confident that we'll be in a good place on this one. So for those of you that don't know who Caribou is, I would be shocked, but he is the chairman and co-founder of the HR Transform, and for most of us, what we know is the InsurTech Connect Conference. I was at the show this year, 2019, one of the best shows that I've been to. Actually, I should say last year, now that the year has changed to 2020, but one of the best shows I've been to. I said this to somebody before about, I feel like the good shows now has a different attitude. Like, I think for a long time, the shows were kind of that, yeah, technology, we got to go, and okay. And then it was like, okay, yeah, we kind of get it. And now I feel like people are into it. And so Caribou, I would say I am a fan of anyone who sees an opportunity and a place where you can help people, and creating a conference like InsurTech Connect. I'm so proud to be part of an industry that has people like you in it doing great things like that. So thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Well, that's really very kind. And, you know, our ethos in the show is to make it so that we actually want to attend ourselves.
Yes.
Firsthand, and that it's a place where business gets done.
That is exactly what it is.
And quite frankly, if a little bit of fear of missing out for the people who might not be able to make it. Is,
as my kids say, FOMO.
Exactly. That's one of our little pleasures in the pulling it all together.
Well, I've got some really good things that I want. This is going to be great content for people listening. As you know, we try to do as much as we can on the show to get information in the hands of the people in our industry. Obviously things you by default, and the shows that you put on are doing that for the industry, but here's another little tidbit. Let's do this podcast and get even more intel to them. But before we get started, Caribou, kind of tell us your story. Tell us kind of how you got to where you are. And what that journey looked like.
Oh, well, gosh. So I started my career 20-odd years ago at Capital One, back in its hypergrowth heyday. There were probably 1,200 people when I started, 20,000 when I left a decade later. So I left, took a year off, watched Netflix, played with my kids, listened to the universe, reconnected with some former Capital One execs. We created a boutique venture capital firm, QED Investors, had a delightful run with that. We were probably more successful than we had any right to be. We grew as a firm. Around 2015, I started to focus on the insurtech sector, mm-hmm. which was just beginning to pop as a thing unto itself. And you know, as part of that, I was looking around for a good industry conference to go to, focused on insurtech, bringing together the entrepreneurs and the investors and the innovation executives. and I couldn't find anything. So had the harebrained idea that I needed to create
The light bulb moment, right?
Yeah. And I luckily found a guy, my business partner, Jay Weintraub, to actually work with me to build it. And he knew what he was doing. I didn't really know what it entailed to build one of these things. But it worked out beautifully. And in the course of 2017, was having so much fun with the conference that I ramped down my involvement in the venture capital firm. Now doing what I like to describe as my third act, really a mix of different enjoyable projects. I continue to help with the conference as well as the launching the HR Transform conference. Joined a few startups as an independent director. And, you know, do podcasts like this and make a nuisance of myself.
Yeah, no, definitely not a nuisance. And if there was anybody out there that had any inkling that this guy wasn't sort of going to be a good listen and wasn't maybe smart enough to give you information you didn't already know, let me just give you a quick little tour through the education of this man. So he got his undergraduate degree from Harvard University. Maybe you've heard of it. Followed that up with a MBA and a law degree from the University of Virginia. So one, my first question is, are you crazy to go to that much school and that hard of schools? But two, I went to University of Washington. The only thing I can say other than is that about my school is that I think my football team would beat yours. But other than that, that's big time right there, my man. That is crazy education. Good God.
It would at least beat my undergrad football team.
I'll agree with you there. Yeah, you're right. UVA is pretty good this year. There, yeah. I agree.
No, my wife calls me overeducated, and I think she's probably right. But, you know, it's served as a good foundation for then. You know, I wouldn't have necessarily expected my undergraduate was physics and philosophy in terms of the field of study, which you might not have necessarily drawn a straight line to, like, working at Capital One for a decade and marketing credit cards, although it turns out physics really important sort of core training and thinking for the credit card business.
Okay,
and so really try to apply a degree of intellectual curiosity, and yeah, that had me spend a few extra years at university trying to satisfy sort of the first part of my intellectual curiosity.
And I'm a big fan of people that do that, and it usually turns out to be people like you that have gone down that road of learning, that also love to teach and love to get people information. So again, we're happy to have you on the show. So let's dig into this thing. I think the best way to start, kind of the process, would be obviously you're talking to people all over the place. From the agency side, from the vendor and tech side, from the carrier side, let's talk about the fundamental forces of tech and tech change in our industry. So just kind of give me your kind of, you know, what does that mean to you, and what are you hearing? What does it mean to us as an industry?
Yeah, so think about change happening to an industry. There can be different reasons that an industry has change happening to it. You know, sometimes it's a regulatory change, right? Mm-hmm. The laws change, and that opens up some opportunities and closes others. Sometimes it's a demographic change, right? Now, I'm not all about millennials and believing that millennials are all that different and such. So I don't think it's a demographic change at work here. I think this is a technology-driven change. I think that if you look at banking, for instance, you know, a decade ago, the rise of the consumer web was a technology change that was actually pretty transformative for how banking gets done. You know, certainly consumer retail banking kind of things. But even the web was not a strong enough force to fundamentally change or transform the insurance industry. Mm-hmm. I like to joke that the insurance industry is kind of that immovable object, and even the web couldn't change it. But there's been, since then, so many additional layers of technology change and important technologies that there's now so much water pent up behind the dam that the dam is starting to burst, right? So yeah, the insurance industry might be a bit of an immovable object on some dimensions, but there's so many technologies that are relevant and can impact the industry that it's become an irresistible force of technology change.
So, okay. So let me just throw some buzzwords or, you know, phrases out there to you. And let me just get your expert opinion on them. So start with one that I always find to be interesting, but blockchain. Talk to me about blockchain.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. 2 years ago, every conversation it seemed like was everyone. Having someone talk about blockchain. It's a lot less common now. I think there's a little bit of fall into earth, particularly in the insurtech world. But blockchain is very interesting. And the reason it's fundamentally interesting, right, it is a type of it's a technology for maintaining a ledger. Ledgers are everywhere. Right. So there's a ledger on my refrigerator. It's called the grocery list. It's actually a shared ledger. Right? Kids can write on it. My wife can write it. I write on it. There's ledgers, right? In every spreadsheet, almost, it's, you know, there's almost a ledger component to it. Ledgers are pervasive. And so anytime you talk about a novel approach to maintaining a ledger, that's at least intriguing. Now, I've been a mild bear on blockchain for insurance. Meaning I think that there will ultimately be some, at least handful of use cases where it actually creates value.
Yeah.
Now don't mistake like proof of concept. Hey, announcement, we got blocked. We moved XYZ onto the blockchain, right? And it works. That's great, but that doesn't mean it works better than the post-it note on my refrigerator. It just means that you can maintain a grocery list on the blockchain. It doesn't mean that you should, So I look, when it comes to blockchain and insurance, I look for really two conditions to be true. I look for, number one, multiple parties are all maintaining a ledger for themselves, right? So multiple independent ledgers of the same underlying information. And secondly, that every now and then they have to spend some time reconciling their ledgers among each other. And everyone who's had to do a reconciliation knows how awful painful reconciling anything.
Yes.
So if you can actually remove reconciliation out of some process, that might be
there's worth. The win. There's
yeah,
the win.
Exactly.
Well, and I kind of giggled when I said it because I, you know, it was such a, like you said, 2 years ago, it was blockchain this, blockchain that. And now I think the shine has maybe worn off, at least as a buzzword. But to your point, I mean, there's value there if properly implemented and properly used in whatever organism, like you said, like we do a horrible job in my refrigerator. My son will eat the last whatever in the house and never, ever write it on the grocery list. It's just, it's all about like, can you make it work in your organization?
That's right. And having a clear framework about why and under what circumstances, blockchain should be the right answer instead of a post-it note, instead of an Oracle database, instead of a Google Doc.
Yeah, I agree. All right, next one, AI. And specifically where I think this goes is real world AI.
Yeah, you know, I prefer the term machine intelligence instead of artificial intelligence, partly because AI is now just so buzzy that it almost loses meaning to it.
Yeah.
But you know, there's been real breakthroughs in the last decade around what machines could actually do for us, and a lot of it is pointed at kind of sensory interpretation, right? So the ability to take an audio file, spoken words, right, and actually transcribe that into real language. There's a certain threshold above which that's got to achieve to be actually useful. Anyone who's tried to dictate an email or a text message in Siri knows what I'm talking about. And that threshold is, it's got to be like 97% accurate or better. You know what? I actually now dictate on Siri all the time because it's actually hit that threshold.
Yes.
You start to get sensory data around like visual things, right? A photo or a video. And again, machine intelligence is now gotten to the point where it can start to extract kind of structured information out of this sort of unstructured video or photo. And I was around, I was on the investing side when big data was the great buzzword of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I even ended up writing an article that got published about, it was entitled In Defense of Small Data. Because I was a practitioner of using data in for a decade in the Capital One days, And it's like, look, it's more important what kind of data, and are you using multiple orthogonal data types than the sheer volume of data you've got for the most part. But on top of that, the sort of true big data sort of data sets, think about, the vast streams of data that you can get out of a satellite, right? Or out of an Internet of Things kind of sensor in a car, right? Those are real big data sources. Mm-hmm. But you didn't have the machine intelligence layer on top of those,
right,
8 years ago, to actually be able to, in practical terms, extract the insights out of them, right? And you couldn't really, in practice, hire a fleet of low-paid labor to do it either. Right? It was actually overwhelming in many cases. Now we have the layer of machine intelligence that can actually handle big data. And so I think that we are starting to see something quite interesting, quite powerful, coupling the big data sets with the machine intelligence and having both of them actually now able to contribute value for us.
Well, and this is such a data heavy industry, right? I mean, there's so much information that we have already at our disposal from the information we gather from prospects and clients at the agency level or from the agency at the carrier level that, like, starting to let machine intelligence, as you say, be a part of the betterment of what we're trying to do, I think is not only, like you said, it's here and it's exciting, but it's gonna kind of change the game.
Yeah, I think the right debate now about it is which parts of the value chain is the real leverage. A lot of folks jump to the underwriting side.
Right.
The way to use big data and the way to use machine intelligence. And I think there's value there, but let's be clear, actuaries are actually quite good at what they do.
Right?
Not
true.
To say that they can't be improved upon, but as a baseline, it's really quite good. I'm much more optimistic that you'll see areas like the back office be the primary, near to medium term opportunity for the industry to get value by applying machine intelligence, right? Think about, you move from paper to PDF, that's a big step, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then you move from PDF to be able to extract the structured data out of it, right? And then that reduces a lot of the paper pushing or file pushing, mm-hmm. and takes a lot of what I'd call the lower end of the white collar work of the back office, right? And automates that to the computer. So I think that, look for more and more of the application of machine intelligence in the next 2 to 5 years being around back office and related kind of activities.
It's so true. What's good about this is you know, because you're out there talking to cutting edge tech providers and how that's going to relate moving forward to in this industry. And you being originally from outside the industry, I think is an advantage because you look at it without any like, oh, well, we don't do things that way. You don't have that lens. So you have such a great way of looking at it that, again, like, this is the kind of stuff that our listeners need to be ready for and be embracing, right? I mean, we just did an episode last month on embracing technology. It was a kind of our, like, we get to the end and we do these time capsules where everyone gives their big piece of advice that's on the show. And without listening to everyone else, one out of four of our people, their one big piece of advice was embrace. And so I think that that's all of the stuff that Caribou is saying to you out there in podcast land when you're listening to this is about what you should be ready for and what's coming. And he knows, because this guy is around this stuff all day, every day, especially with all the stuff that he does with the show. So, all right, I'm going to go to the next one, which I love, because to me, this feels like where we catch up to so many other industries, if we can pull it off and it's API. And you, in another conversation you and I had, you said API-ification, which I thought was just a fantastic word. I want to put it in the dictionary, but talk to me about, API and even at the level of API, how friendly can we be with that? Like, you know what I mean? Like, how nice do we have to play in the sandbox?
Well, and let's start, in case not every listener is familiar or is obsessed with APIs as I am.
Good idea.
Working definition, an API, an automated programming interface. This is kind of the software glue between different systems that might operate. So it might be the way that one system accesses a data set, or how one system accesses some sort of functionality that another system offers.
So would a real world example of that be, I just bought something on eBay, or I'm about to buy something on eBay, and I click buy, and it takes me to PayPal behind the scenes to pay for that because of an API integration between eBay and PayPal? Is that a good example?
That's right. There's a whole bunch of calls from one system there, the e-commerce system, to the payment system, right? And part of why companies like PayPal and Stripe are succeeding today compared to incumbents is they natively sort of approach that and provide that by API. Mm-hmm. The API-ification of insurance, I do see it happening, right? So rather than going from sort of big iron, one integrated, complete end-to-end system for all your needs, you're starting to see the architecture shift over to, you know, think like a backbone, a spinal column, and each part of the value chain, right, has its own APIs available. And so you're starting to see vendors make their capabilities available by API. You're starting to see the companies, whether that's an insurer, an incumbent insurer, or a new insurer, you know, one of the full stack startups, they're starting to build out their systems architecture on an assumption that if they need some piece of functionality, they'll just be able to point to the right API that either they'll build for themselves or someone else will build. And by the way, if they need to switch from, you know, one type of functionality to another, it just means switching from one API to another, right? Yeah. It's a much more modular approach, sort of like, think about Lego blocks, right? And you can easily, you know, disassemble and reassemble the technology stack that you want.
And as our industry advances, that becomes like to your point, the fact that you have to define what API is where we are currently with some of our industry. And what we're hoping is this thing moves forward, and that I mean, I am a huge believer in API integrations, because I think that companies, my company being a great example, I don't think we should, and our strategy is not to be good or even do everything. We want to be good at what we do and be able to integrate with best of breed at other things, because there's so many different ways to skin a cat. There's so many different ways that an agency might decide to go about their business. And that could be, you know, any different number of other great insurtech options. But we want, as a, you know, kind of a core management system, we want our system to seamlessly talk to those systems, to make this an easy thing so people can go back to what they do, which is work in the insurance business.
Yeah. And look, APIs, I believe, apply to the entire value chain of insurance, claims, product underwriting. It's interesting to see what's, I think, is happening in the distribution side. For the most part, I'm not the kind of guy that says, agents are going away, insurers are going to be going completely direct to consumer, anything like that. On the other hand, I think that APIs open up the door to a strategy that actually could be disruptive, not just transformative, but actually disruptive to the way distribution is done today in at least some categories of insurance, because APIs really facilitate embedded insurance. Right. If you think about some categories, travel insurance is an easy example. I buy my airline ticket on Expedia, and embedded in that customer experience is an offer for travel insurance. Mm-hmm. I buy that TV from Amazon.com, and embedded in the purchase experience is the offer for SquareTrade, extended warranty.
Yep.
And that's embedded insurance, and that's fine. You can do that without APIs if you're a big enough sort of vendor and a big enough a commerce site.
Right.
You can sort of do the heavy IT integration, and you can do the heavy biz dev integration and conversations. But APIs take the friction out of doing, you know, I hesitate to even call it an integration, right? Because that's the whole point. You don't have to integrate. They take the friction out of embedding an insurance product into someone else's customer experience. And that's really powerful.
Yeah, that is a powerful. That's a powerful thing.
And you know, so I don't think it's, you know, that a threat to agents is materially, you know, in the next 10, 20 years is about, oh, well, all the insurance is going to be sold direct to consumer on the web. No, I think the more interesting threat to the traditional agent broker system is actually that it still is indirect distribution, right? Sort of B2B to C, but instead of that middle B being a broker, yeah, it ends up being a business of some mm-hmm. sort, like an Expedia or an Amazon yeah. being in the middle there. And insurance can be embedded by API.
Well, and I think that brings me to the kind of the, you know, I just saw the movie Ford versus Ferrari, and the only reason I'm saying that is because it's got a versus in the middle, because I want to do a versus here. But by the way, fantastic movie if you haven't seen it. And I think years ago, and by years, I mean a few years ago, I think the big word was disruption. And you mentioned this here. So the versus here is, talk to me about the difference between, or the disruption versus transformation. Because to me, that's, like, I feel like disruption is not passé, but it's, the word itself doesn't have the same negative connotation. And I think transformation now becomes like it feels so much more like if you embrace it and if you go with it, then there's a positive to it. Talk to me about that. Disruption versus transformation.
Disruption is overused in the tech press. Right. And there are examples of disruption, right? I think that actually when you look at media, right, you see real disruption, right? I don't want to be a national newspaper for the most part, you know, 10 years ago. You see it in streaming video. You arguably see it in, you know, the taxi industry, right? Ask any New York City taxi medallion owner, they've actually gotten disrupted. On the other hand, you know, most of financial services has not gotten disrupted. It's gotten transformed in a number of instances. And that includes, you know, shifts about, you know, where the revenue pools are going to and the profit pools, who's, you know, you see a shift of market share from one to the other. But for the most part, disruption, right, a true changing of the industry structure is rare in financial services. Mm-hmm. While transformation, right, what is the nature of the product, who's offering it, who's winning and losing, I think that's actually fairly common from technology-driven change in an industry like financial services. And I think that's also what I'd expect to see here in the insurance industry. I would be surprised, for the most part, if there's a lot of disruption in the industry. I will not be surprised. In fact, I kind of expect it, and, you know, indirectly betting on, there's going to be some transformation going
on. Not indirectly, directly. Right, just
fair
not.
Enough. Fair enough. But I think that you're going to start to see, and starting to see, new players, right, come in here and begin to put their straw into some incumbents' profit pools and start sucking a bit of that profit over to themselves. Yeah. You'll see certain incumbents, right, start to make changes in what they offer, who they offer it to, how they offer it, through what distribution, how they handle claims, right? I mean, just moving some of the claims process to self-serve, mm-hmm. right, where the consumer might take a picture of the underlying claim rather than you're having to send an adjuster every single time. I don't know that that's disruption. I mean, but it is transformative. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I think, I mean, even things like, I mean, look on a grander scale, like the Gecko, who I can't watch any game on television without seeing the commercial. That was, I mean, I would say originally thought of as the direct writer being a disruptor. I think what it's done is has transformed the way we have to go do business in our, in the independent space or even in the captive space. You got to go out and take yours and be better. And to your point of self-service and meeting consumers where they are, that to me feels like a nudge in the right direction, which transforms our industry. And that has a very much more positive connotation to me. So, I mean, that's okay. I want to move on because I know we want to keep this at a digestible amount of time, but I do want to hear more of what you have to say on a different topic. So I want to change gears. I mean, again, you're out there, you're talking to insurance folk, and then you're also, you know, spending a ton of time with tech folk. So talk to me about in the insurance industry, how that sort of those two worlds have collided or meshed. And what effect that has on talent in the industry and culture in our industry.
Yeah, you know, I hate to say it, but I really think that talent and culture is the single most important driver here. And I hate to say it because, you know, you pointed out I went to business school long time ago.
Yep.
And I would argue the most useless class in business school is organizational behavior. even with the case method, you just can't really teach it that much. But the most important driver of success in business is organizational behavior.
Yes.
Right, and the talent and culture aspect of it. And so, you know, one of the things that I think is just a tremendous positive for the industry happening in conjunction with this insurtech movement is an influx of new talent, and you know, a lot of it high quality talent, and a lot of it that probably would not have considered engaging and being part of the insurance industry otherwise. I mean, I think it's fair to say that the insurance industry has a little bit of a talent branding issue.
Yes.
That it's starting to get overcome with this influx of new, young, often technical talent coming into the sector.
Well,
I think
that's
a real positive.
And I think it's a huge positive. And I like even walking the halls of InsurTech Connect this year, like it's just a different vibe. Like there's just a different, I've been in this industry for way, way too long. And that those hallways used to be three-piece suits and grumpy old dudes. Like, and now it's young people and they're slick and they're smart and they're savvy. And I love to see that kind of like influx of young, smart people in the industry.
I'll give you a kind of a funny example. The insurance nerds team.
Oh, I love those guys.
They're great. They maintain a Slack community of like 1,200 people. I enjoy reading and every now and then contributing to it. And I saw a post from one person who was kind of new to the industry. And she literally asked, like, do I have to learn golf and do I have to take up golf to be in this industry? And I don't think she was kidding. I think she was actually trying to navigate the norms of the sector. And, you know, now there's a little bit of, you know, skewed population among the insurance nerds community, but thankfully the answer was a resounding no. It's fine if you play golf. So my best friends play golf. It's not a problem. But you don't have to anymore in order to engage in the industry, to be part of it, to be a leader in it, to move it forward. And so in a way, that is the epitome around the shift that's happening in conjunction, maybe even caused a bit by InsurTech, around the culture and talent, is that you don't have to play golf to be a leader in this industry anymore.
Well, and I think what's great about that is it's such a kind of, I mean, I laughed when I heard you say it, but if you just keep that in the back of your mind, like whether you golf or not, that's not the point. The point is that the times have changed, and it used to be, agency principal or producer was out golfing to get his business, and you don't have to be there. And so if you just actually remind yourself every once in a while, do I have to play golf and to be in the insurance industry, and answer it no, it should level set to how our industry has changed, which should help you think about things in the right way. I think that's great. I think that's great input. Okay. One last question for you before I ask my very last question, which I ask everyone, but from your perspective, what's the single biggest trend in insurance right now?
Now, I've got to give credit to my InsurTech Connect co-founder, Jay Weintraub, because I'm going to plagiarize his answer. He was asked this once, and I overheard, and I unfortunately cannot think of a better answer, so I have to keep giving him credit.
Good.
The single biggest trend in insurance right now is InsurTech.
Yeah.
So it is actually this movement of unleashing all the technology that's been pent up behind the dam now for years upon the industry, not to disrupt it, but to transform it.
Yes, I love that. And I think you're so right. I mean, obviously it's you're drinking the Kool-Aid because it's what you're involved with, but you are 100% spot on. It is what is changed every other industry, right? And the tech side, and now to have InsurTech be as wonderful as it is, with as many opportunities for people to take whatever they want, whatever version of that feels comfortable to them, and better their opportunity to do their job in a way that's more successful. I think you're spot on. Okay, before I ask the last question, I just want to, like I mentioned before, like the InsurTech Connect show to me is a must attend. And we are early in the year. You're budgeting for trips. Tell me what shows you have upcoming in 2020. And like I said, how many were at 2019? Was it 7,000?
7,000.
Yeah. Okay.
It was good. It was a good show.
That's not a small number. I do remember the lines being a little bit problematic, but you'll fix that for next year, right?
That we will fix. So we've got three events coming through the year 2020. The first actually in late March is HR Transform, which is not sort of necessarily squarely in the insurtech component of things, but it's really focused on the impact of technology on the future of the workplace and HR tech.
Excellent.
Which actually does have some overlap when you start to look at things like dental benefits and other and health insurance and aspect of that. So there is some overlap there.
Okay.
Then we actually have our first inaugural InsurTech Connect in Asia. That's happening the first week of June in Singapore.
That's so cool.
It's a long flight for folks who are in Asia. We do get a couple hundred people coming from Asia to InsurTech Connect in Vegas, but there's actually tremendous innovation happening across Asia, and it really, in our eyes, begged having a super regional conference there, and so we're doing that.
And let's be honest, you were looking for a vacation in Singapore too, so you tied it into that. Let's be honest.
Never been to Asia, really looking forward to it. and then the big flagship show, InsurTech Connect in Las Vegas. And that'll be again in September at the MGM in Las Vegas.
I'm guessing most of you out there have already heard of it or attended, but is there a website for more information? And I'm guessing, is there early bird specials and things that people should be taking advantage of?
InsurTechConnect.com has all sorts of the information there. And if you sign up, provide your email when you're on the website there, you'll opt in to the email list. And I swear we are actually very prudent with sending people emails. Up until the show, it's like once a month kind of pace.
The rifle approach, so, not the shotgun approach.
We try to be very respectful of the inbox, included with that piece, the early bird specials.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, and again, I think that going to shows, or at least a show, a conference like this, conferences like, shameless plug, but the Accelerate conference, which is powered by NetView, which is our Vertifor user group, that just getting in the room with people that are thinking about stuff in a different way is always positive. Vegas can always be fun depending on how you take advantage of it. And I am just a huge, huge believer in what you're doing. I'm humbled by the fact that you were not only willing to come on the show, but then re-record again, that you're a good man, Charlie Brown. I really appreciate having you on. I'm going to finish with the last question. What is Caribou Honig's one big piece of advice for the insurance industry?
My one piece of advice for insurance is be curious. If you've been in the insurance industry for 20 or 30 years as part of an incumbent, be curious about what kind of changes might happen. Be curious about the kind of technologies that are being developed that span outside of insurance but are now beginning to come in. And if you are someone who is 2 months or 2 years into the insurance industry, particularly coming from the startup world, I would also say be curious. Yeah. Be curious about why the industry operates the way it does. Right. I think that in many cases you'll find there's a great rationale, and I think you know there's an opportunity to learn, and by everyone involved in insurance and insurtech, being and staying curious.
I think that's great. I would, if I were you, I would get off this podcast and I would go connect with Caribou on LinkedIn. He's got some great articles. He always posts and likes and shares other people's interesting content. Again, Caribou, thank you so much for being on. We really appreciate it. And I think this information is really good for everyone to have.
It's really my pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thanks, everybody, for listening in. Make sure to subscribe. The other thing is go follow me on LinkedIn, and I will be I post these every week. We'd love for you to connect with me that way and also share them with your universe so we can get the message out. Again, that was Caribou Honig giving great information, and we will talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Vertifor Insurance Podcast, and tune in next Thursday for a brand new episode. You can find more episodes at vertifor.com under the Resources tab or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you subscribe, and if you enjoyed this episode, share it on social and spread the word. Don't forget to join in on the conversation and recommend future guests by messaging us at vertifor.com.